Hey everybody, it's Eric Balance coming to you with the Resilient Minds podcast, where I feature beautiful entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and experts in their field, where they help us discover their X factor, their experience of life, only to discover how they were able to accomplish and find out their Y factor, their big Y, their purpose in life. So join me as we get to discover the beauty of our minds and how can we really continue to go after the biggest and most wildest dreams while we continue to pursue and manifest our greatest intelligence that comes from the heart. Also, if you haven't, go check out the new alignment course that I've created at www.ericbalance.com/alignment, A-L-I-G-N-M-E-N-T. See you on the show. I'm super excited. Welcome first to the Resilient Minds podcast. I'm super excited to have you here. It's really a pleasure and an honor. I really want, for those that are tuning in live or coming in later, I really want to introduce Dr. Caroline Leaf. And first of all, again, I just want to say thank you for being here. Thank you for taking the time, because I know our time is one of the most precious assets that we have. So really, like, welcome, you know, like,
thank
welcome.
You. Thank you. It's exciting. I'm excited to be with you. I like the name of your podcast. It's great. We've got thank so you, much yeah. resilience in us. So it's a big part of what I do, helping people build resilience. Absolutely.
And for those of you that don't know about Dr. Caroline Leaf, you know, she's a communication pathologist and cognitive neuroscientist. You've got a master's, a PhD in communication pathology. And you're going to help me here. A Bachelor of Science in Logopedics.
Pedics. It's a funny word.
I love it. It's from the University of Cape Town and University of Pretoria in South Africa, which is, where are you coming in from right now?
I'm actually in Dallas, Texas. We've been in the United States for the last 13 years. So I was born in Zimbabwe, grew up in South Africa, and we've been living here for the last 13 years.
Amazing. So now I really want to get curious here, because I'm about to talk about the mind-brain connection. But before we go into that, you've been for the past 13 years, you know, working in specifically in the US, but of course helping people from all around the planet. Now tell me a little bit about how has the experience, because I always talk about like the X factor and our experience of life contributing to our biggest why, our biggest purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious, before we get into anything, what has been something in your life that has been such a pivotal component? And I'm conscious that you've probably had multiple or thousands.
Yeah.
You know, but what has been that one denying, like, experiential moment where you're just like, you know what, this is like how I have to follow, you know, my mind or my heart at the end of the day, my ability to really show up in the world to contribute to my biggest purpose, my why.
It's a great question. And it actually was about 38 years ago when I began on this journey, and I was in one of my neuroscience lectures, and I'd initially wanted to go into neurosurgery and got into medicine. And then I thought, I don't want to just be cutting up brains. I want to be connecting with humans. And so the mind, I felt, was an area that was just not being explained enough. And we were getting so much neuroscience and that kind of stuff, which is, it's wonderful. But where was the humanity in this whole thing? So the lecture, there was one specific neuroscience lecture, and I'll never forget it, where they were speaking about how your brain cannot change. Now that's in the 80s. Now we know from the mid 90s, and in fact sooner, that your brain can change. And in fact, from that particular lecture, I questioned that lecture. And this is where the pivotal moment for me came. It was, hey, that can't be right. Our brain is changing, because our mind is changing, because our experiences are never the same from any moment. So from moment to moment, we're going through different experiences, and it's our mind that processes the experience, and the brain that is where the mind shows up. And there's this distinct difference. Now in the 80s, they spoke about the difference between the mind and the brain. Now in the 2000s, the mind and the brain are seen as the same thing, which is also not healthy at all. So way back in the 80s, yes, they didn't think the brain could change. They saw the mind and brain as separate. Now they understand the brain can change, but they think the mind and, well, they don't think, there's a body of scientists that are very dominant that say that the mind and the brain are the same thing. And that's kind of a dominant philosophy in sort of the medical world. But back in the 80s, mm-hmm, that was my pivotal thing. I was challenged, and I remember saying to the professor, I don't agree with that. And they said, okay, well, that's kind of a ridiculous question if you asked, you know, the brain can't change. And I said, let me research that. So I started my journey of research as a clinical neuroscientist and clinical researcher with people with traumatic brain injuries, because there was, and the reason I chose that group was because there was hardly any research on people with traumatic brain injuries. So here I'm thinking, if I can work with someone whose brain has been so damaged, but you work with their mind, and despite the damage in the brain, that person can restore to a level of function, whatever that improved level is, then I can actually prove neuroplasticity. I can prove this concept of mind changes mm-hmm. the brain, and that your brain doesn't control you, that it has a massive influence because your mind needs your brain. But there's another factor, and that factor is you as a human. So I started my research. I did some of the first neuroplasticity research back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s in my field. I showed this 35 to 75% improvement in people with traumatic brain injuries there in terms of function. I had people that were literally written off as vegetables by the neurologists, go to get degrees at university. Their cognitive, social, emotional, intellectual development was phenomenal in terms of change. I then worked with people with dementias, autism, Alzheimer's, severe learning disabilities, traumas. And so my research grew. I started with developed a theory based on these mind, the mind, the how I understood the mind and the mind-brain connection. And from there, fast forward 38 years later, I'm still doing clinical trials. I spent a 25-year block of my life working very intensively with people from all walks of life, all socioeconomic strata, very wealthy, very poor, very traumatized, Rwanda, South Africa, apartheid, all those. So I dove very deep and did a lot of infield research, working with people, trying to understand resilience, the mind, the brain, humans, what it is that we do when we're alive. And that really set me up for the clinical trials that I currently do and run. And my most recent book, I've got a summary of one of the trials, and now I run a whole team, and we're doing years of research, going to be doing years more clinical trials. And so that pivotal point has set me up on this journey. I practiced for 25 years and now I write books and teach around the world, and we reach millions with this message of your mind. So there's a long answer to, but it really changed my career trajectory, my mindset, that particular lecture. And from that day, I've never stopped pursuing that goal.
I love it. And thank you so much for this, because I think it's really important. And what you've discovered and what you're continuing to kind of be being pulled. Because I, you know, the other day, it's so fascinating how these things come at the right time. I was having a conversation and I was sharing, and as we were talking about how the mind actually, it's consciously believed that like the mind is in the head. And I believe that there's this disconnect. And like you said, from a mind and a brain, or the mind and the head, right?
And yeah.
My belief system is like, there's this heart brain, right? Then there's this like, this head brain. And then there's the mind fullness through our body, right? And so the connection comes from, And you know, correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, like at the end of the day, this is me coming from like a perspective of my experience.
Yeah.
That like, you know, we connect to my heart. My heart will like connect to my brain, and then my mind fullness will come through my senses throughout the mind is the body. And like, this was something that like, I really like was like, wow, you know, through going through these like experiences of experiencing ayahuasca or plant medicine and different experiences, it's like, wow, like there actually is this ability to really disconnect from the brain, get out of the brain and into the mind. And for me, that was like a really clear connection. But what really happened for me was allowing myself to come from a place of like heart stewardship or heart intelligence, and being really guided by these 40,000 neurocytes inside of my heart brain to then allow me to be amplified by my head brain and then feel it through my body regularly. And this was something that like, it came up literally yesterday in a conversation, and today we're talking about this connection. So I really think it's fascinating. But what are your thoughts on that?
Okay, well, let me explain, because I spent 38 years studying this. So it's an area, mind is an area and I love what you've just said. And so I'm happily discussing, because I'm consumed with this. So What has happened over the last 40 years is this huge emphasis on neuroscience, which is incredible. I mean, it's part of the work that I've done, understanding the brain and seeing we've learned so much more about the brain. But we've learned so much about the physical aspects of the brain that we've forgotten a lot about the mind, which is not even in the brain. It shows up in the brain. It's two different things. So I'm going to explain it like this. You've almost got it right from what I understand. Okay.
So,
but the body's not the mind. Okay. The body's not the mind. The mind is over and above the mind. Okay. So here's the brain and here's the body. Okay. So I'm holding up, for those that are listening, I'm holding up a model of the brain and the body. So the brain and the body are physical. If I had a dead person next to me, they wouldn't be able to join this conversation. Nothing would be happening. Their brain and body would be busy disintegrating. That we can all understand. So what is the difference between a dead person and you and I having this conversation and the listeners and viewers? It's our mind. So our mind is the definition or the word that we can use. And there's many different ways of using the word mind, but mind is historically and from the ancient texts and from hundreds of years of scientific work, the mind is a really good word to explain the difference between the physical and the sort of non-physical, even though mind has actually got a lot of physical components. So the mind is what's enabling you and I to experience this conversation and the viewers and the listeners to experience this conversation. It's our mind that helps us to experience life. Now, the mind takes the experiences of life, and those experiences of life, the mind can't do anything with them unless the mind has the brain and the body to actually process them, or to store them. So the mind shows up in the brain and the body in different ways. So it's not that the brain in the head and the brain in the heart, which is the 40 neuron brain that there's been a lot of research done on. It's not that they are actually, it's not that that's where the mind is, in the heart and not in the brain. It's, or we have this thing that if I'm just in my brain, I'm just being logical. You know, there's been a lot of that kind of conversation around, which is reflected in what you were saying. And it's not wrong, because that is what is the conversation. People that are trying to get more spiritual, that's the language that they use. People that are very much more neuroscientific, they'll use a lot of just brain language and the neurons fire, and that's what produces the mind. But I ask you this question again. If you throw all that narrative out the door, completely go back, and this is how we good critical thinking. If you want to solve a problem, you want to throw every narrative out the door and start from basics. And the basics are that you're alive, I'm alive, and we're not dead. If we were dead, we could not have this conversation. If we were dead, we could put all the equipment on our brain, like QEGs and fMRIs and EKGs on our heart and all these things, but we would see no response if we were dead. But now that we're alive and we're having this conversation, if I put a QEG on you and I, we're going to see phenomenal brain patterns happening. And we're going to see in an fMRI incredible oxygen and blood responses. And we're going to see EKG, we're going to see heart responses. In other words, something is happening because we're alive. And that's the mind. The mind is this you and me, our unique you-ness, our ability to think and feel and choose about what we're experiencing in our environment from the moment we open our eyes till the moment we go to sleep. So in the most simple definition, mind is your aliveness. Aliveness is your ability to think, feel, and choose. You're always thinking, feeling, and choosing at about 400 billion actions per second and faster, taking in the external experience, pushing it into the brain and the body. So that's where the mind shows up, in the brain and the body, and you're storing the experience in three places. And now this will make a lot of sense to you, related to your comment you made in the beginning. We store the first experience is that it hits the entire body. The experience you're having right now is the entire body through the process of quantum physics, gravitational field, electromagnetics is in the entire body. So in terms of sequence, we can't really say that this happens in this particular sequence, it seems to sort of happen simultaneously. But for the sake of ease, I'm going to say it in three steps. So you listening to me now, the listeners are listening, the viewers are watching. There's sound waves, there's electromagnetic light waves, there's voices, there's words, and it's our mind that's taking this all in and making sense of it, pushing it into the brain, and the brain as a field, as an electromagnetic field, and the brain then responds electromagnetically, chemically, and genetically. And this experience is built into the brain because the brain is neuroplastic. And in order for the brain to be able to help you you experience what to help you process to deliver or to make something of what you've experienced, you've got to build it into your brain. So then the brain takes this and builds it into these tree-like structures that look like, that's why I use trees, little, I'm holding up a green plant for the listeners, builds the experience into these trees, which are on the neurons, which are little dendrites. It builds these thought structures that are tree-like in nature, made of proteins. So as I'm speaking and as you're asking me questions and as we have this conversation, that part is built into the root system in other people's brains and in whoever's listening and watching. And the branch part above the ground is the unique interpretation that each person has of this information. So no one's hearing what we're saying or seeing what we're saying in the same way because of our unique way that we think, feel, and choose around the information that we're having. The point is that the conversations, the experience, the mind takes the experience. It's all these energy fields and all the psychological think, feel, choose. It's pushed into the brain. The brain responds by building genetically, neurochemically, electromagnetically, and genetically, makes these proteins. The proteins grow to form branches, and inside each protein is the vibration, the quantum vibration of this content. So the more I add, the more proteins, the more branches, I just get more and more and more. What I'm saying is the roots and the interpretation build simultaneously how you understand it. So you get the source and then you interpret the source, and it's all happening super fast. As that's building in your brain, pretty much simultaneously, the brain then is instructed to then send a message to the body, as well as the whole body stimulated by this experience. And that combined makes a change in every single cell of the brain and the body. So this is really built, but there's other cells in the brain and other cells in the body. There's about 37 to 100 trillion cells collectively in our brains and our bodies. So as we build the thought in our brain in the tree, our body, the cells of our body also get an instruction to change genetically. So the information is also changed in our cells. So every single cell of our body will store a representation genetically of this information. Now, what that means is that cells form organs form systems, systems form your body. That's body memory, of which the heart is a part of. And the heart plays a role. The little heart brain, the 40,000 neurons, has a very direct connection to these certain circuits in the brain that are part of the executive system. And so it starts setting up a sort of relay system, and hormones are secreted. And so in other words, there's a whole psychoneurophysiological response. Now that's two places. So the thought is stored in the brain as a tree, in the body as a genetic, in every cell of the body as a genetic change. This is why when people recall a trigger of a PTSD, some sort of traumatic experience, they feel it in their body. This is why things like EMDR work, why walking therapy, which predates EMDR, which is where EMDR grew out of, is movement that helps to release and activate the trees in the brain. So the movement of the body activates the tree and the thought trees in the brain, which then enables us to then feel that. And then we can start with our mind talking about that. Then it's stored in a third place. And the third place is in the gravitational fields of the mind. So around, you and I are sitting, we're not floating because of gravitational fields. Everyone gets that. But we also have our own unique gravitational field that surrounds our body. Yours is different to mine. You have your own unique electromagnetic and gravitational field that is surrounding and through your brain and your body. When a person dies, that goes immediately. That moves. So where that goes, there's all kinds of spiritual implications. And that's another whole beautiful philosophical spiritual discussion. So that's the third area where anything is stored in the mind. So if you think of the podcast, and I'll stop after this, if you think of like what does it look like in the tree? It's a brain. I mean, in the brain, it's a tree. In the body, it's a change in our gene code. But in our mind, it is a gravitational field. So think of like when you watch a podcast and you see the little, you know, the little lines that are jumping up and down as a person's talking, you know, those little lines.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good analogy for what the memory looks like in the in the mind field. So that's memory, that experience is stored inside thoughts, in the brain as thought trees, in the body as a gene change, and in the gravitational fields of the mind, third place, as these gravitational fields. So that's significant. So that's why it's such a holistic experience. So everything that we experience is built like that. And that's why we experience it in three places. And that's why there's so much about the heart, the gut, the feelings, all those things, because of what I've just described. And that's the mind-brain. That's pretty much a part of the mind-brain connection.
This is absolutely fascinating and so beautiful. And the way that you elaborate on, especially like from what I'm hearing, their brain is like the tree of life. So is our body, you know, like the connection from the roots to like, it really is fascinating. The branches. Yeah. And I wanted to like emphasize a question, because you talked a little bit about, you know, once we die, or what if we go into these places of meditation, vipassana, you know, or ability to really connect to ourselves, where we are in this 5D, or maybe plant medicine, or maybe psychedelia, whatever people do to connect to themselves, when they are in that fifth dimension, so to speak, and their mind isn't necessarily present, but like they're still part of this world. What is the significant change that happens? And maybe you can elaborate a little bit deeper on this, because I'm curious, and I'm certain, I'm 100% certain there's people that are curious out there that are listening right now.
It's a great question. And it, essentially, anything that's psychoactive means that anything, like even chocolate psychoactive, anything that is affecting brain function is going to change how we connect with ourselves. So that goes for food, exercise, and then your more extreme, like the psychedelics and things, which can create a very strong immediate effect. But and anesthetics, all of them are different degrees of the same kind of thing. So whatever we're putting into our brain and our body is going to change it. So whether it is a conversation, or whether it is an exercise, or whether it is a drug, or whether it is a psychedelic, or whether it is a food, it's changing the brain and the body. Some have a more dramatic effect and some take a little bit longer. It's cumulative over time, but you are changing. And that's what we see people when they eat a lot of junk food, they get brain fog. Or when you do a burst of exercise, you suddenly get clarity of thought. Or when you have a great period of rest, like which is something you're putting work in. You're breath work and meditation, all these things are brain prep. I call all of those, I would categorize under brain preparation, brain and body preparation, because what they do is they allow the brain and the body to start aligning and getting into, and I'm talking about sort of healthy versions. If we put toxic stuff in our bodies, it's going to create a toxic effect. So I'm talking about on the healthier side of things. Yeah. So when you use, you know, for example, psychedelics, I mean, that's not my area of research, but I have interviewed a lot of people. I've done a lot of reading on it, but it's not my direct line of research. So, but anything that alters brain and body, nothing is, if your brain's altered, your body's altered, your mind is altered, nothing is ever in isolation. Everything is holistic. And that's what we need to understand. Mm-hmm. So when we go into those states, whether it is getting into deep meditation, whether it's through breathing, whether it's through psychedelics, whether it's through whatever, you are changing the neurochemistry in the brain and the body. And you're changing the way that all the systems of the body are functioning. And you're kind of almost slowing the physiology down, or changing, I shouldn't say slowing, changing the physiology, so that the mind, which was always dominating, and it shows up in the brain and body, but that you can kind of move away from your physiology and focus on the mind. And the mind comes, which is always, the mind is first cause. Without mind, you're dead, as I keep saying. And where mind goes and our bodies are physically dead, we don't quite know. You know, there's, as we said, we can discuss that there's many spiritual philosophies around that. So basically that experience that we're having is where we've used some kind of substance to change the neurophysiology, which allows the psycho part, psychoneurobiology, psych mind, neurobrain, biology, the rest of the body. So when we put in a substance, we are controlling the brain and the body biology, and then the mind is able to dominate. The mind has we have this messy mind, which is our experimental mind, which is the mind that is learning, making mistakes, learning from those mistakes through repairing or not repairing and staying unmanaged, which is not good, because then we get into even more of a mess. And in order to repair our messy mind, we also have our wise mind. And our wise mind is a term that I use for the fact that we see in our psychoneurobiology that we actually wired for love and for optimism. So we don't have any systems in our brain and our body, anything for toxicity. What we have is for experiments, making a mess and fixing the mess. So we can have an argument, but we designed, we can handle that. It'll be toxic. We'll build an unhealthy thought, but we designed to manage that. So we designed to catch ourselves and repair and grow. So that's what we designed as humans, to be like little scientists. Mess, repair, grow. Mess. We're not designed to be messy and stay messy. Staying messy for long periods of time impacts our mental and physical health, our psychoneurobiology, because it goes against the wired for love nature. Because the wired for love nature is that our psychoneurobiology fights anything that fights the health of your body. So AKA COVID virus, it's threatening survival. So your immune system fights it. This toxic thought of that abuse as a child or whatever is also a protein, misfolded protein. This is a healthy thought, the healthy green tree. But if you have a toxic experience, there's the roots, there's the toxic experience, there's your interpretation. This is toxic. This is these proteins, chemicals, everything about this is real as the COVID virus, but it's a threat to the brain and the body and the mind's survival. So your psychoneurobiology will do everything to eliminate this. And that's where your immune system sends out T lymphocytes and B lymphocytes, and your, you know, your endocrine system responds, and your HPA axis, and every single part of you responds to prompt you to get rid of this, to deal with this. And that has to be done through your mind. So your mind and brain and body will tell you to consciously become aware to change this, to change the situation. So therefore, we are constantly in this discussion. And as we control down our physiology through our breathing, meditation, brain prep, brain and body prep, we are then able to focus more on what is in the mind zone that is actually disrupting and challenging that survival, that wired for love. And so the optimism bias, for example, which is the wording we use for the mind having this wired for love nature, is that we are drawn to anything that's toxic in our life. And whether it's, and we're drawn to anything, it's not because we have it wired in, it's because it's threatening the balance. It's threatening the survival. So we go to it to fix it. But if we don't know how to manage the, or you get immersed in toxic media and whatever, if you don't manage it, you can get submerged and then you merge with it. So instead of fixing it, you get worse. You know, this thing grows in a toxic sense instead of being managed, and then you increase toxicity. So going into the zone through any of those brain preparation things, and I talk about it in my book, I talk about it in my app called NeuroCycle, I lead people through it. Mind preparation is vital to get you into that sort of zone. And there's different levels, as we know, where you can get really, you know, the psychedelic level to just breathing. But all of them are not, but you've got to go beyond. You can't just do that. Those create a sense of awareness. They bring the mind into dominance and the physiology into...
integrating it now, right? Like exactly. Creating that essence of like, it doesn't need to be just about breath work or just about going into psychedelia. It's about what are we doing day in, day out to actually exactly. create this momentum every single day.
Got it. And that's the thing, because people are looking for a quick fix. So they think, okay, I'll go do psychedelics. Yes. Or I'll go and do the breathing. And I'm totally for all of those because I understand the science behind them, but they're not enough. I've showed in my research that just if you just brain prep and you just develop awareness through mindfulness, meditation, or whatever, you're going to get worse in the long run because they're not sustainable on their own. You have to do what you just said now. You are actually living. You can't just live in a meditated state. You can't just sit breathing all day. You've got to go to work. You've got to be in a relationship. You've got to live. Living doesn't allow you to sit breathing all day long.
You know? So do you feel now, because this is powerful, like what you're sharing, this is like the integration. Do you feel when you are in that wise state that you nail in that essence of following your heart, following the intelligence that's guiding us, being in that wise state to notice that, listen, this is how I need to continue to bring this whatever negative or toxicity, I need to fix it, meaning that I need to follow my passion, I need to follow my real desire. And is that a way to create integration in one's life so that there's always that essence of like, listen, I'm following these like beautiful states of possibilities that I can find through breath work, that I can find through psychedelia, that I can find through plant medicine by following the thing that I love to do in this world?
Yes. So very good. So essentially when you talk about heart, we're talking about mind, because your heart can't do anything if you're dead. Your heart simply is a structure where your mind shows up and uses. Okay. So when we talk about following your heart, you really are talking about following your mind. Wise mind. So wise mind versus messy mind. Wise mind. So in other words, we, at our core, we are wisdom. Wisdom is survival. You can only survive with wisdom. So we see that in our neurobiology. We see that in our psychology as well, in our psych as well. So the psychoneurobiology is all this wide full of thing. So yes, when you are in your wise mind, which only comes from self-regulation, which is basically mind management, which is what I teach, what I've spent my life researching. If this is mind and this is brain, how do we manage our mind to manage our mind and our brain and our body? And I mean, for example, with exercise, I know you teach a lot about, you know, people healthy, exercise, eating, and so on. You can lose a huge percentage of the benefit to your DNA from an exercise routine if you go there with the wrong attitude. Now, I know you can go into exercise feeling awful, come out feeling great. But if you go in and you are worked up and you go in with, you don't prepare your mind, like you shouldn't prepare your brain, you're not going to get the same benefit. You can lose up to 80% of nutritional value and assimilating nutrients if you don't have your mind, if you're eating in a negative toxic state, or if you're doing exercise in a negative toxic state. So if you're going to exercise and you're going to eat and you want to develop that whole that following yourself through to achieving greatness and goals and just having and even beyond just this greatness, we've got to look at peace first. True success is, do you have peace in the midst of chaos? If you're going to do that, you're going to have to go into that meal with, okay, I am worked up, acknowledge it, get it out, process it. Let me, you know, not eat now. Let me get to a point where I'm fairly calm and get this mind managed, self-regulate myself to a point where I don't have the wrong energy going through my digestive system. Or I go to the exercise workout, I'm really upset about this, but let me get my mind, let me process this, compartmentalize it. You could do that in 5 seconds and get your mind in the right state. So that's just the two simple examples, but people are not really understanding. People are not taught this. We should be taught this in school. I've been promoting this for years in the schools where I've worked. I've trained thousands of teachers in schools around the world. I bring this in as a session. We should be teaching kids from very young how to understand and manage their mind and what mind is and emotions and what they mean and how to process, and so that people can get in tune with their wise mind. Because even kids as young as 18 months have got wisdom. Wisdom is, it's of even course. Younger, but it starts showing up around 18 of months. The wise mind is our ability to have this conversation. It's to, when someone comes and asks you for advice and you can listen from your perspective and you can give them perspective, you know, and or just wants to talk to you and you say, hey, have you thought of it from this angle? That is your wise mind. And your wise mind is always trying to dominate.
I love it. You're amazing. Like, this is so resonant for me. You have no idea. Like, it just,
I'm so pleased.
And what I'm hearing right now is compassion.
Yes, a lot of it. And kindness to yourself and to others. Yeah. A lot. And that's wisdom is all about compassion. Wisdom is, I never see you as a threat. I see you as someone who can do what I can't do. And therefore, when I lift you, I'm in turn enhancing my own abilities, because there's something you could do that I can't do. And if we collectively come together, we can do so much more. And it's that, it's not about me competing with anyone or you competing with anyone. It's all about us enhancing. So when we operate in wisdom, that's how we function. We want to help others. We want to reach out. We want to share. We want to build. We want to, it's natural. It's the natural oozing part of us. And that's how society grows and develops. Not through competition. We don't grow and develop through competition, which is what we've been told. That this tends to destroy people, which is very evident in our society. Growth and intellectual development occurs in collusion, when you're working together towards the greater good, et cetera, et cetera. And that always sounds so philosophical, but that is the design of our psychoneurobiology. You know, one of the things you asked me, the pivotal question in the beginning, was motivated to find out mind. One of the things early on I really realized was, if you teach people to think and feel and choose, in other words, if you teach people to use their mind, they are so much more, they're nicer. They're humans. They become more tolerant of others. They become more loving. If you're different to me, I'm not threatened by your difference, and nor do I want to change you. I simply want to enjoy your difference. There's no threat involved. Whereas, what do we live in? We live in a world, Eric, where people are, if you're not like me in my tribe, you're different. There's something wrong with you. I've got to make you like me, or I've got to eliminate you. And that's not a healthy situation. And until we get to the point where we can accept these different cultures, these different religions, these different viewpoints, these different philosophies, it's so basically related to thinking, feeling, and choosing in a way that actually aligns with our psychoneurobiology. Because when you're in that zone, you will function at a different level. And people battling so much because we're not allowed to be who we are. We've got to fit into these molds, and we've got to, you know, society's attacking people's individuality and their uniqueness, and we're not allowing people to process through the pain of the experiences which come from other people's pain and their choices. Whereas, you know, so it's all boomerang, it's all interacting and affecting each other. So we've got to be able to process our pain. And that comes full circle back to the question you asked earlier. We can't just meditate. That just activates. And I showed with my research, if you're just aware, but you don't manage it in the self-regulated way, if you don't get into this very strong mind dominant, get the physiology under control and then work in your mind and actually work, process through in mind, which is what the neurocycle that I developed does, helps people to go beyond just mind manage and mindful awareness, you're going to get worse. Because if you're aware of stuff and you don't do something with it, you shove it back down into an unconscious mind, it goes back even worse than before. So now you've got this whole neurophysiological response, and you actually will increase your vulnerability to disease by 15 to 95%, 98%. It's massive. So we have to manage our minds. We have to tell ourselves it's okay to be messy. We have to give up compassion, kindness, give ourselves permission to make the mess and then to manage the mess. But we make a mess and then we feel so guilty to try to hide it, or we feel guilty because we're not doing what that wellness guru is doing, or we're not as healthy as that one, or there's something wrong with me. No, there's nothing wrong with you. You're amazing. But you've had adverse experiences, or you've had toxic information, or you've had toxic positivity or toxic masculinity, all kinds of things, toxic cultural upbringing. There's been stuff thrown at you that's blocked out the wise mind. So you've got the situation of here's your wisdom and here's the stuff blocking. You have to kind of pull that apart and find you. And in finding you, thinking.
You talked about wise mind, and what's the other mind?
Messy mind, messy wise mind, and messy mind. And that's why I talk about cleaning up your mental mess in the book, cleaning up your mental mess.
Amazing. I want to know more about your book, but right away, I want to just hear about messy mind and wise mind. So messy mind is messy mind coming from your brain and wise mind from your heart? I'm just curious
how this works. No, not at all. Okay. Brain and heart. Your heart and your brain are just part of your physiology. And if you're dead, they do nothing. They can do nothing. But when you are alive, your mind is energizing. So your mind is this is dead. You plug it into mind and now you have an alive person. So the mind is your thinking, feeling, choosing. And it's this energetic gravitational field that's energizing the brain and the systems of the body, of which the heart is one, and each has its own specialization. And for example, the brain has 200 specializations, with each with its own endless circuitry enabling you to produce you. But that's all designed to suit your mind. This is designed to align with mind. Mind drives this. Mind shows up here. So see them as separate but inseparable. So dead mind plugged in.
You don't see that the wise mind like is a specific part of, like, is there a level of intelligence that comes from the heart and a level of intelligence that comes from the brain? I'm just trying to get this concept a little bit deeper.
No, nothing comes from the brain or the body, because the brain and the body are physical. They are, if you take a computer and you don't plug it in or you don't charge it, it can't do anything. Your brain and body are computers, basically. So to make them work, you have to then plug it in, and you need a human to make the computer work. So the human with their mind. So what makes this brain and body work is your humanity, your mind. So your mind is the first cause that actually then activates the different specializations in the body. So then they start responding. So as we are born, in the womb, as we start at a certain point in the womb, you start seeing this already starting to take place. So essentially, mind is separate from the brain and the body and activates the brain and the body because of the specializations of the brain, the heart, the gut brain connection, the enteric nervous system. We see this beautiful neurophysiology, mind showing up in this neurophysiology, and then that responds. So when we have a gut reaction, it's a response. When we feel like we've got a deep spiritual insight and we want to say my heart, that's actually just, it's your mind working, using your brain and your body, showing up in your brain and your body. And because of the different structures, the different rewiring the neurophysiology. I mean, we've got as many neurons in our gut as we do in our brains, called the enteric nervous system. We've got this 40,000 neuron, which is not very big, but it's a little sort of neuron cluster in our heart that works with the front part of our brain. It's been attributed to produce everything about our spirituality, which is totally not correct, because if you did, that's not doing anything. It's just that's where we see a lot of activity happening in response. So think of your mind as being 90 to 99% of who you are. And in who you are is Eric's unique ability to think and feel and choose in the way that only you can. So you have that showing up in your electromagnetic field, the photons, gravitational field. And now how do we make you talking, looking like you are, saying what you do? You need Eric's brain and body, which is then aligned for this mind. It's brilliant because your mind is brilliant. So as the two connect, we have you producing what only you can produce. But if that's gone.
Yeah. So when, because like there's been research that like people have had heart transplants and they've been put into a different body, like a physical body.
Yes. And then they experience the thoughts.
And they've experienced the thoughts and the experience of like what the person prior to them. They're like, I've never known anything about that. Like what?
Yeah. Okay. So what's happening there? Okay, yes, so do you remember I said when you as you experience life, it's stored in three places. So this podcast, for example, is stored in your brain as the tree. Oopsie, it fell out of its pot. The brain and the tree. It's stored in your body, in the 37 to 100 trillion cells of your body, which includes the heart. Okay, so all of this is about 37 to 100 trillion cells. So as this experience now that we're talking is built into your brain, it's also going into every cell of your body, including your heart. So it's in your cells of your heart, and it's in the gravitational fields of your mind. So it's in three places. So when someone has a heart transplant, if your heart's been in your body for X amount of time, it's got X amount of the cellular memory from the brain and from the mind. So here, this podcast is also being stored in your heart as we speak. So if your heart was transplanted into someone else's heart because you happen to die, when they remove a heart from a person, the person's still alive. If the person has physically died, the heart's not viable anymore. So there's still mind going through that person's, but it's mind that we don't fully understand at that point because it's starting to move away from the body. They can't, they're non-functional into the person who needs the heart. It's still, there's a point where it transitions, yes, where it's taken out of one and then put into the other, where it's kind of in a no man's land. But then the life of that new person who's still alive, their mind is still active in that body, reactivates the heart. But that heart has come with cells from the other person, and in the cells are genetic changes that were stored physically. So what that person is re-experiencing is not every single thing about that person's life. Because it's the heart has its own unique way of storing that experience. And it's going to be the experiences that are the most dramatic in our life, positive and negative, that have, because we think, feel, and choose, which means that into our thought trees, we build memories. Like trees are made of roots and branches, our thoughts are made of roots, which are the source, and branches, which are interpretation. So these are memories. So thoughts and memories aren't the same thing. A thought is made of memories. So this could be a thought about a toxic abuse that was never resolved. And that's maybe thousands of branches over here and thousands of toxic interpretation. The person dies, and this was that you think, feel, choose in response. So there's thoughts, feelings, and emotions. Feelings are like glue. And if this is a very dramatic experience, it's a very strong glue. So the more dramatic the experience, the stronger the genetic change in the heart. So as that heart when they do the heart transplant, forget the word for a second, the most dominant thoughts, like this thought over here is a healthy thought. This is a small healthy thought. That one probably you won't remember, but this one is some dramatic thing. So now this person with the new person's heart, there's a couple of super dramatic things in their life, and that's what people re-experience. They'll be triggered. Something will happen that will trigger this from the heart into that person's brain, and they don't have a brain memory of it. They don't have a tree in the brain. They don't have it in their mind. They have it in the cell of the heart, the dramatic memories. So it gets triggered into, so when you've got someone else's heart, you don't have that experience in your brain and your mind because you didn't build it. You've got someone else's organ in you. Okay. So when something triggers, the whole experience triggers, the heart is activated, that memory, wherever it is, this, let's say it's this one, is triggered. That then is felt in your body, in your brain, and now your mind's trying to process this. So you'll have this weird, what is this? You know, you'll have this experience of like this thing coming back into your mind that you didn't have, but it doesn't make sense because you didn't build it in the first place. If you built it in the first place, it would be in your mind, your brain, and your body. Does that make sense? And if the transplant is only in the physical. That's a different way of looking at it.
I love it. And I think it's really important because I love this perspective. And I think it's very unique and very different. And I can
it's
ask
very,
you a
it's
thousand
very
other questions
it's
about.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Yeah, it's user friendly. No. It creates autonomy. I'm giving people independence and understanding of what is going on and how you can control it. That's really, because if you feel helpless and you feel like you don't have agency, that's when people commit suicide. That's when people give up. That's when people go into extreme states of depression and anxiety because they don't feel like they have control. And that's what our current mental health system is telling people. A lot of people that
I think
you
that
don't
that's
have control.
Been a big thing that actually has happened. My sister was told that she has a bipolar disorder and it created a lot of disorder in her lives. And as a result, it actually pushed me away from her because I thought what I thought. And, you know, I had to go through my own journey and develop the compassion for myself, knowing that I did the best that I could the way that I did. And like today we have an amazing relationship. Thank you. You know, following my wise mind, right?
There you go.
Allowing
you
me
go.
To really... have the ability to create compassion and process all of that was a way that I was able to, instead of push her away, embrace her and say,
wonderful,
like, let's do this together. And now she's in a better state and able to like really transform. But the biggest thing that I've realized is that how important would it be if we told these individuals that there's nothing wrong with them, that instead that there's like, how can we embrace them with love, with compassion, with intelligence, and really like follow this ability to really like serve each other, be stewards of each other, you know, because together we rise, right?
Exactly. And you've hit the nail on the head. And that's such a beautiful example that you've given, because if you read in my book and if you hear my teachings and that I've said for 38 years now, is we have to do three things. We have to embrace, we have to process, and we have to reconceptualize. We have to do that as individuals in a very self-regulated way. And that's basically mind management. Mind management is us self-regulating by embracing, processing, and reconceptualizing the patterns in our life that are stopping us achieving, like that diagnosis of bipolar. You can't actually have bipolar. You can have cancer, but you can't have bipolar because it's not an it. It is actually an emotion. It's an emotional warning signal. It's your the cells of your body, it's the cells in your brain, the thought trees in your brain with their memories, and it's your mind all working towards helping you recognize, hey, there's something wrong. So it's alarm bells going, hey, wake up, this is not something bad. Embrace the bipolar for what it is. It's not a disease of your brain. You're not a broken person. It's not who you are. You are feeling that emotional response because of an adverse something experience or a series of adverse experiences. In other words, the message to your sister is, hey, you're amazing at your core. You're wired for love. You're wired for survival. You have optimism bias. There's something you can do that no one else can do, but you've had adverse experiences and those you haven't been able to process them. Doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. Maybe you just didn't have the chance or know how, or it's just where you're at in your life. And as you process them, you can then start changing. But that bipolar is not a diagnosis. It shouldn't be diagnosed. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be so, because diagnosing and saying that makes people feel I've got a brain disease. Meanwhile, you don't have a brain disease. Your brain's affected. It's definitely, your body's affected. I show that with my research, your DNA, your telomeres, your homocysteine, your cortisol, things go crazy. But that's only in response. That is all your body saying, hey, wake up. Pay attention, embrace me. So when we embrace, if you think of embracing, you bring them into your fold. you're not seeing it as threatening. So bipolar would be, in this case example you gave, a helpful messenger. It's something, it's horrible to feel, yes, and to experience those emotions, but it's a helpful messenger. Now, the minute you take that attitude versus, oh, I've got bipolar, I've got a neuropsychiatric brain disease, that latter is going to create such a toxic response in your body that 1,400 more or less neurophysiological responses will start fighting against you and increasing your vulnerability. But if you say, okay, it's okay to be messy, my messy mind is in this one of the emotions I'm experiencing is bipolar. And if you start unpacking bipolar, there's a 200 other emotional experiences, and then behaviors and perspectives and all kinds of things will come up, and you'll start seeing, okay, these are just patterns. These are just warning signals. There's a reason. These are just coming from here. What am I thinking about myself? What am I feeling? What am I choosing? Okay, if I track it down to my processing, if I embrace it and process it, I can see a root. There's a whole bunch of stuff that went on that resulted in this adverse experience changing how I'm acting and functioning and communicating in life. Out of communication pathology. That's a pathological communication, not because you pathological, because you've gone through stuff that is pathological. So our communication is telling us what is that. So then we've got to embrace it, to process it, to reconceptualize it. Reconceptualize means that I see it differently. I change it. Now, in that process, we have to do the brain preparation, which is all the meditation, the havening, all those beautiful things, which help us to calm down on neurophysiology to the point where we can actually start looking at the pattern and noticing the signals, of which there's four different types.
And we start observing, right?
Observing the self-regulation. So it's a process of the self-regulation involves a process of, okay, there's patterns. Okay, those patterns are coming from, they like these smoke signals coming from something. It's not who I am. Introduce the kindness, the compassion, and the recognition.
And that's where the wise brain then comes in.
The wise brain comes in. So the wise brain is saying, hey, so Eric's sister, whatever Eric's sister's name is, what's her name?
Joanna.
You going to tell me? Joanna. It's okay. So Joanna, beautiful name. My big sister's Joanne. So it's the wise mind saying, hey, Joanna, you're amazing. There's something you can do that no one else can do. Mm-hmm. You're phenomenal. You're wired for love. I can be kind. This is okay. You're showing up like this because of, it's not, you're not broken. Yes, you're feeling broken, but it doesn't mean that your identity is broken. So let's distinguish between who I am as Joanna, Caroline, Eric, versus what's going on in my life, my brain, my body, and the messy mind. The wise mind is really your reality. So we've got to go back to that core. And at any point, we can shift into that, and we can train ourselves to get into the wise mind whenever we need to. And that's what my systems do. They teach you to access the wise mind so that you can then stand back, look at the patterns, and then start unpacking why I've got to this state. And you need support in that process. So she needed Eric in the process.
Tell us more about your book, because I really want, before, I know you have only a few minutes left and I want to get so much more questions, but I can't. Tell me more about your book, where people that are tuning in can find out a little bit more about your book, reach out to you, connect with you, and find out more about what you're up to in the world.
Absolutely. So what I did over 38 years was develop a system that would help people to manage their minds, not techniques. You can put anything into this. You can do all the meditation, diet, exercise, but I wanted to develop a system to help people to self-regulate, to be able to stand back, observe themselves, and manage their mind. So prepare with all the meditation stuff and then go beyond that. So I developed a concept called the neurocycle. It's had years of research, years of clinical application. I've written many, many books. And my most recent book is Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess. And I tell you, it's okay to be a mess, and here's how to manage it. So in the first half of the book, I put some of my clinical trials, very simple, the mental health system, the stuff we've been discussing. And then the second half, I tell you exactly how to do what it is. How do you do this? And it's over time. You're not going to fix anything over time. It takes cycles of 63 days. A lot of people think I can change in 21. That's a myth. We don't build habits or make changes in 21 days. We will reconceptualize. You can find the toxic thought, embrace, process, reconceptualize. It takes you 21 days to do that. But this is how big it is. It's tiny. The new change, because reconceptualization means I'm not taking my story away. I'm just changing it to make it work for me, to give me a sense of peace, to give me a sense of clarity. That's wisdom. Wisdom says bad things happen. I can't change what's happened, but I can change how it plays out into my future. Wisdom says this is not good. I can cry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be depressed. But let's get a handle on it for how we can make that work for us. How can we carry on living? And after 21 days, it's only this big. So the neurocycle, as you go through the neurocycle daily, for about 10 minutes, 10 to maximum 45, you're going to start embracing and processing and reconceptualizing. By day 21, amazing, you've got this new way of functioning, but it's not stable. It won't impact your communication, your behaviors at this point. It's not strong enough because it's competing with all, this is gone now, it's been converted because energy is never lost, it's always transferred. But it's competing with a bunch of other stuff in your brain, and your mind and your body. So you've got to grow this. So you need to spend another 42 days, 5 minutes a day, 42 days to grow it into this. Now look at the difference. This is now a amazing, strong, dominant, full of energy, so that when I'm in the situation, this comes up. And because what we build into our mind, brain, and body is what we say and what we do. So everything I'm saying and doing now is coming from very strong memories that I have built years developing. So I can talk about this. I'm not talking from fresh air. I'm talking from these things in my brain. My body gene code changed and my mind. So it's had practice. So something takes another 42 days to stabilize. So that basic process is in the book, and you can apply to anything: building habits, detoxing habits, building a new eating habits, setting goals, etc.
And where
they can find the book wherever books are sold. Wherever books are sold, it's available globally. It's also available on my website, which is drleaf.com. And then my Instagram handle is Dr. Caroline Leaf. Every day I put out little snippets of stuff to help people with everything that I teach. I've got a podcast called Cleaning Up Your Mental Mess, where there's lots of interesting information. And yeah, they can get a hold of me in those places. So Dr. Caroline Leaf and drleaf.com, good places to start.
Thank you so much for your time, your wisdom, your brilliance, and so much of your wise mind, your love. I really appreciated it. It was really an honor, a really beautiful, beautiful gift to have you on the show. Last question
before we go.
I know we're a little bit over time. What would you do if you had 3 days left to live?
I would do everything I can to spend with my family. I would bring my family around me and operate. And I would do everything in my power to make sure that this message of mind and that we wired for love gets out there. But yeah, I'd be with my family, and I would be focusing just on telling them how much I care and love them, and put everything that I know into them so that they could carry on living in peace.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Do you want to add anything else before you go?
Maybe just the last statement, that you can't change what's happened to you, but you can change what's in you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Appreciate you.
Hey, everyone. And thank you so much for listening to The Resilient Minds. I hope you enjoyed the show. Please make sure to go comment and like and follow us on iTunes or Spotify. And make sure that if you really love this, to share this episode. And make sure that you're inviting all your friends to like it as we continue to unfold what the beauty of our minds does. More importantly, how powerful our heart level of intelligence can be when we combine our heart and our brain together. And more importantly, check out the alignment course that I've created. It's seriously there for you to take advantage of at www.ericbalance.com/alignment. See you on the next show.